Hey there, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, May 20th, 2009, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge, with your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. That would be me.
Listen to me. I've chucked in my job at the cafe for this, so you get in there, get on your back, and get busy.
I don't think I'm that kind of guy. Listen, sex fans, I have something truly extraordinary for you today. As you know, this sex education podcast series brings you interviews and chats with prominent educators, practitioners, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles from all over the world. Today, we add to this chorus of voices one that is rarely heard in public. I have the distinct pleasure of introducing you to my special guest. She's a working girl. You know, a lady of the evening, a trollop, a whore, a streetwalker, an escort, a courtesan, a pro, a hoe, a prostitute, a hooker. In fact, my guest is the one and only modern hooker. She is an actual sex worker currently plying her trade here in the good old US of A. But, for obvious reasons, her true identity must remain hidden. Despite that, her perspective is extremely valuable. Modern Hooker is also an activist, a poet, an educator, and an author of a kick-ass comic strip called, aptly enough, Modern Hooker. She's here to help dispel some of the myths and misconceptions of sex work, and she does so with a wicked sense of humor. You don't want to miss a moment of this, sex fans. Be sure to visit Modern Hooker at her fabulous website, modernhooker.com. You can also find her brilliantly biting comic strip on carnalnation.com.
Well, we've not had sex for 23 years. Are you available?
23 years is a long time, and no, I'm not available right at this moment, because I'm busy. Today, we welcome a brand spanking new podcast sponsor. So Hard. That's right, sex fans. So Hard is what we in the business call a boner pill. But So Hard is not just any old Viagra knockoff, no siree. It's a pure, all-natural herbal formula that improves sexual health, combats erectile dysfunction, and increases the strength of your erection when aroused. Listen, I've tried So Hard, so I can testify to its effectiveness. Watch for my full product review that will appear here on my site on Friday, May 22nd. In my years-long search for the holy grail of herbal erection enhancers, I have found only one product that consistently delivers on the promises it makes, without all the nasty side effects. So Hard improves genital blood circulation, which assists in achieving and sustaining a strong erection. Listen, get your wood the natural way. Visit SoHardOnline.com today. Look for their banner on my site. You'll be so glad you did.
I spent all my time rummaging inside his pajamas looking for his little willy.
You are incorrigible. Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Modern Hooker, and thank you for joining us. It's hard for me to get those two words, modern and hooker, out at the same time and in the same sentence. Would you like to say hello to the nice people?
Hello, beautiful people, and thank you, Dr. Dick, for having me on your show.
You're quite welcome, and you know, you're doing me and our audience a great service, because we don't often get to chat with people in the sex industry, and so I'm really pleased that you are here, and I know that we'll be hearing from a lot of our audience in the days to come. But before we get on to the nitty-gritty, so to speak, could you give us a little bit of a background? How did a nice girl like you become the modern hooker?
Well, am I the modern hooker or the postmodern hooker? I'm not quite sure. But, you know, actually, I started out as a streetwalker in Hollywood back
Get
when
out.
I was a teen. Yeah. And it was not a good experience for me at all. I was too young. I wasn't prepared for the streets. I mean, I came from a middle-class family. My dad taught English at the local university.
Wow.
But I was really drawn to the whole subculture.
And
I ended up meeting a pimp in a bar. And he had me start working in his gentleman's club, which was like a massage parlor. And then another pimp caught me and took me to California and had me work on the streets. And back
That's hard
then,
work.
Yeah, it was... I was just acutely aware that I didn't belong there. You know, I mean, I wore glasses and I looked like a secretary and, you know.
That's hot in porno movies.
Yeah, I know, that's hot, right? I was strangely popular. But, you know, the truth or the reality of the matter is I was drugging and drinking a lot back then. I didn't have a habit, but the whole thing was really dangerous. I got mugged by another pimp with a gun once. I was sexually assaulted a couple times. I escaped pimp number one to go to pimp number two and then had to escape pimp number two both times under threats of death. And, you know, a nice customer of mine offered to buy me a plane ticket home, and I took him up on it. But the whole thing was really scary. I wasn't even experienced sexually. You know, I mean, I wasn't a virgin, but I didn't have the skills or the survival tools necessary to take care of myself. And, you know, I didn't have anybody to talk to, really. No support system, no mentors other than my stable sisters who were more worried about, like, competing against me than looking out for my scrawny ass. You know, so...
It's hard, and, you know, I'm familiar with a lot of people in the industry, and when I was in San Francisco, I did a bunch of outreach to young people who were... working, mostly doing survival sex, and it was horrific. I mean, it was horrific. They were much older than they were supposed to be, you know, in terms of life experience and stuff like that. And the amount of time that a person can last on the street, at least back then, and I suspect that it's much the same thing now, is very minimal. I mean, it's either burnout or die or, you know, flee.
Well, I mean, that's largely the case in my experience, but that's not entirely the case. I mean, there's street workers out there that, you know, even, you know, people that have habits and stuff that have a level of a responsibility or accountability to themselves and to the work and so forth. It's not all people supporting drug habits. It's not everybody has a pimp. You know, it's not all doom and gloom, but it's not a good place for someone who's inexperienced you know, to be. So basically,
besides, you don't have much control over your environment either. I mean, the safer sex workers are people who can control that environment. Would you not say?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, one of the things I was taught several things to watch out for, and one of them was if when you get into somebody's car, check and make sure the door handles are there when you're opening up the door on your side.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's just all pretty creepy for me. But so, kind of back to the background thing, I returned home, and I started waitressing. I got into therapy. I got clean and sober. I've been clean and sober for a long time now.
Good for you.
And went to college, got married, had a couple kids, had a professional career for a couple decades, got divorced. You know, and I did the whole struggling single mom thing. And I toyed with the idea of sex work, but I was really afraid that if I got caught, my kids might be taken away.
Right.
So I started doing performance poetry around my days as a streetwalker. In fact, I called my poems hoetry or homes.
You are so clever. You
yeah,
are
aren't I,
so
though?
No, but you really are. Honestly.
I wanted to, like, create this whole new genre of one. And one day, one of the poetry readings, a woman came up to me and she whispered, "I'm a former hooker." And I was blown away. You know, I'd never met a former hooker in my adult life.
Wow.
So she and I became best friends, and we got really involved in the sex worker rights movement. That was about 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and I eventually started escorting. But for me, I needed to wait until my kids were more or less grown and out of the house before, you know, before I did that.
Some wisdom in that, because it can be very unforgiving. I mean, the social fabric of our culture does not allow for that. And that brings me to my next question. And it seems that everyone has an opinion about sex workers, regardless of our religion or our nationality or our gender. And for most of us, that opinion is actually an uncompromisingly harsh judgment. We tend to have a whole bunch of stereotypical misconceptions about the work and those who practice it. And unless we are in the same line of work, we nearly impossible for us to fathom why sex workers do what they do. So maybe I could ask you, why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, why do any of us do what we do for work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's primarily for the money, right?
Right. Good thinking.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, by the time I started escorting, money was a big motivator.
Yeah.
I'd made pretty good money in my former career, but I'd hit a ceiling with what I was going to be able to earn, and I was still relatively young, and I had a roommate at the time who was a sex worker. She'd come out from Chicago. She was a nationally, actually an internationally renowned professional dominatrix.
Wow.
And she was working in sex work, and so it was kind of like this, you know, oh, well, It took me a while to you know, really consider, you know, what it was, you know, to consider about getting back into it, but eventually I did.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was the money, and I was also curious about how sex work would impact my sexuality.
Ah.
As I've always been interested in conducting experiments with my sexuality. For instance, before I started escorting, I was abstinent for a year.
No kidding.
Yeah, I found I kept making the same mistakes in relationships, so I decided to abstain from, like, all relationships, including sex, anonymous sex, to give myself time to, you know, step back, shift gears. And I also wanted to experiment with denial of sexual gratification.
Interesting.
Oh, that part was torture. You know?
That's what
sweet
they call
torture.
It.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So the first sex that I had coming out of abstinence was with my very first escort client.
Wow.
And
that's coming out of the gate.
Yeah, like, it is coming.
Gangbusters.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, having serial sex with strangers for money was an extreme swing in the opposite direction from abstinence.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I enjoy extremes, and, you know, as long as I have safety measures in place. So.
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah. So.
And that's one of the common threads throughout this whole series of podcasts that we're doing called Sex Education, is that, you know, people that I'm chatting with that are living alternative lifestyles or are on the cutting edge in terms of sexuality have this great capacity for intensity. They're looking for as much intensity as they possibly can in experience and in their sexuality. So I think that that's a fascinating thing to have discovered.
Well, and I want to be clear that, you know, that's just my experience, and not everybody has the same reasons or motivations.
Right.
I don't think everybody's like as, you know, I don't know, experimental as I might be or whatever.
Right.
I don't think that's necessarily even a prerequisite to getting into sex work, but so.
It doesn't hurt.
Well, what doesn't hurt is, you know, having, what was that movie, Gross Point Blank, where, what's-his-face says, you know, I had to have the moral flexibility. You know, I had to have, like, a certain degree of moral flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't, you know, that's one of the things I think you need to examine, is you just kind of have to shed some societal or reexamine some, you know, societal standards and mores and see if they're applicable to you or appropriate for you and your sexuality and kind of take that leap.
And you know, that the same is true again for anyone who is, you know, on the cutting edge in terms of sexual expression. It could be polyamorous, it could be swinging, it could be sex work. There's all kinds of things. You know, even people with multiple partners. And you know, I mean, our society is pretty buttoned down when it comes to sexuality. And
right.
anyone who deviates from that, you know, there's a price to pay. And so one does have to learn how to bracket off the societal expectations and the mores, you know, at least until one finds a more comfortable space in which they can determine their own agenda.
Right. And that's why community is really important
yes.
for sex workers,
yeah.
you know.
And
we understand each other.
Yeah, and you're a big advocate for sex workers, are you not?
Well, I like to consider myself an activist. Yeah, I would definitely say that that's true.
I was going to save this for later on in our conversation, but I
can
hardly
talk later about it.
We probably will again. But one of the things that I want to make sure that we bring up is that not only are you an activist and a sex worker, but you're also an artist. You create a comic called Modern Hooker.
Right.
And I think it's absolutely brilliant. That's what brought you to my attention to begin with. I saw you on Carnal Nation, and I was just stunned. You know, here is, first of all, a woman who's breaking all these taboos, societal taboos, and has the chutzpah to write about it and also be funny about it. I'm just, my hat is off to you. Big
time. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's really fun.
And I suspect that the things that you're writing about resonate with other sex workers. Is that not true? Are you hearing from other people?
They identify. In fact, there's periodically the occasional kind of inside joke. Like there's one comic strip where I'm talking about the tools of the trade. Like you need a computer, you need a cell phone, and so forth. And then I go, and the biggest tool of all is the client. And it's, you know, I mean, it's good-natured joking and so forth, but believe me, there's a lot of sex workers out there that are nodding their heads when they read that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, with all due respect to our clients, you know, we do have a kind of a good-natured, you know, poking fun at them sometimes.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I get questions from time to time on Dr. Dick about, you know, particularly from men who say, you know, I really love sex and, you know, I've got a really great body. And, you know, some clients or some friends of mine said, you know, why don't you, you know, turn to turning tricks and get paid for all this great sex? And I said, you know, it takes a whole lot more than just, you know, being a sexual athlete. I mean, you really have to know what the fuck you're doing. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you feel like you could leave the industry whenever you wanted to, or do you feel financially or otherwise trapped?
Oh, no, I could, you know, I can quit whenever I want. No, of course I can leave. I mean, you can leave your job.
Yeah.
You know,
but that's one of the misconceptions that a lot of people have, is that people are doing this because they have no options.
No, oh, yeah, that's not my case at all. In fact, that's not the case of any of my peers.
I would
not a single
not.
One.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I don't, you know, I mean, I am in a particular type of the industry. Not all prostitutes are escorts,
yes.
You know, not all sex workers are escorts or prostitutes, but I have, you know, the privilege of having an education, having a former career, that type of thing. But, you know, I can leave when I want to. In fact, I regularly take breaks, you know, a month or two, whenever I feel burnout approaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I eventually retire, you know, I'm going to go back to my old career, possibly, and I'm really, really going to miss the money.
Yeah.
Because I'll never make this kind of money again. Mm-hmm. Unless I go to law school or become a doctor, you know.
Yeah.
So,
I know several people who have put themselves through law school and medical school by sex work. So, you know, again, I think that is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gathering that you are basically happy doing what you're doing.
With the work itself, yes, it fulfills me.
Mm-hmm.
I have experienced inner peace and pure bliss
mm-hmm.
during some of my calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel energized and happy after a session with a client, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Not with every client, not every time, but I strongly believe, it took me about a year to kind of realize this, but I really believe that sex work is one of my callings in life.
Uh-huh.
You know, but am I happy with all the bullshit that goes with it? No.
No.
That doesn't make me happy. That makes me sad and somewhat angry.
Yeah.
The having to lead a double life for fear of being ostracized or stigmatized.
Yeah.
The having to lie about what I do or how I spend my time to certain people, where I get my money,
mm-hmm.
The fear of being arrested.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I got convicted, I would have to spend a mandatory 30 days in jail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not jail material.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a responsible citizen. I have, you know, I am having consensual sex with another adult in the privacy of my home, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so sometimes I'm really affected by the fact that I can't freely engage in my chosen profession, you know, in something which brings me, like, so much satisfaction and more financial security than I've ever known
mm-hmm.
because of the current laws which criminalize prostitution.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it goes, this is a labor issue. I'm an American laborer who is routinely discriminated against by oppressive laws which have no basis in reality or function other than to apply some moral standards to my sexuality and what I choose to do with my body.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? I mean, isn't it, this has always stunned me about capitalism, American capitalism, you know, our puritanical capitalism. I mean, we can rip off people, we can do exorbitant usury in terms of, you know, the credit card interest that we rip people. We can steal, we can cheat, we can commerce on absolutely anything, oftentimes
right.
when it doesn't even belong to us. And, but if we commerce with something that is innately ours, our body, somehow that is wrong. And
well, that's because
people don't
fear interest rates. People fear, you know, their sexuality. I mean, this is, you know, this is not a new phenomenon. People
no,
have been afraid
not.
Of, you know, just like the Christians that, you know, burned the pagan
yeah.
villages down thousands of years ago. They feared the unknown.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a complex type of situation. Yeah.
So do many people in your life know of your career? And if the majority don't, what do they think that you do?
Well, I mean, yeah.
Do-do.
What I do-do. You said do-do.
I know. And this is the radio. Oh, my God. Please.
Well, I have to compartmentalize my life, you know, for the reasons I said earlier.
Yes, exactly.
Most of my family knows I'm a former sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm active in the sex worker rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
Most of my colleagues in my former straight profession do not know. Mm-hmm. And if they did, it could have devastating consequences for me professionally because of the stigmatism. I mean, when I retire, like I said, I'm going to probably go back to my former profession in some manner, consulting or freelancing. And mm-hmm. I need to protect my reputation in that community in order mm-hmm. to be able to return to it and make money in it. But those who don't know think I still freelance in my former profession.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. Do you find that sex work impacts on your relationships in general and your intimate ones in particular?
Well, not outside of what I've already said about trying to hide,
uh-huh.
you know, having to
right.
hide what I do from certain people. I mean, that impacts me more than it does them.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't like lying. I'm not that great at it.
Uh-huh.
It's not who I am.
Yeah.
And it's important to me that I conduct myself with integrity.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my core values. And I don't feel good that I have to compromise that value just to work. You know, I mean, when I retire, it won't necessarily be because of the work itself. It'll most likely be because it's become more important to behave in accordance with my values
mm-hmm.
than it is having to live with the fact that I have to compromise
mm-hmm.
them. But, you know, I'm in a relationship now with a former client.
Wow.
And, you know, I get my intimate needs met through him, just
mm-hmm.
like everyone else does.
Right.
He and I are in a monogamous relationship.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Because that was my next question. I was going to ask, if you do have a partner, how does he or she deal with the demands of your work?
He's very supportive. He thinks it's kind of hot. He calls
Pervert.
Me infinite opulence. Which I think is rightly deserved. No, I'm just kidding. No, he thinks I'm just like this amazing, like, sexual being, and he just sees my sex work as an extension of who I am. He recognizes it as valid, real work, and we leave it at that. There's no jealousy or anything on his part. He knows I'm not doing it because I need the sexual kicks, or it's kinky, or I'm a nymphomaniac.
Yeah.
I'm a sexual services provider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I'm in session, the focus is entirely on the client and their needs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
it's a completely different thing. And again, that gets me back to a question that or a statement that I made early, is that most of us who have never had any experience in sex work would never even know, you know, that there's such a thing as client-oriented, you know, sexuality. You know,
yeah,
they think that, you know, that the hooker, the sex worker, the hustler it's all about them, and it's not. I mean, that's
no,
the good one.
No. No, 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 yeah. It's like, you know, you go to a masseuse and she doesn't sit there and massage herself or talk about herself.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a counselor and you don't listen to their problems.
Unless they're coming here, and then I tell them, but
yeah.
Never mind.
Well, you know, it's not to say like it's entirely on them. I share myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to be as authentic as possible, but I limit it to, you know, leading questions. Like, if they ask me a question, I'll answer it, but I don't start out telling them, you know, like about,
mm-hmm.
you know, how my faucet broke the other day. Because that's boring and not hot.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Yeah, let's say I'm a fetish. A broken faucet fetish or something. And they're going to hear the whole damn story.
I love it. You are such a treasure. Oh my goodness. This is where I'd like to move on just a little bit about the nature of the sex work that you do. And then, of course, I don't ever ask you to generalize from your particular experience, you know, onto others. But is sex work all about sex, or are there components to your work that may not necessarily include your genitals?
Oh, I think sex work is more about an intimate connection.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, the premise is that we're getting together for sex, but
mm-hmm.
I see a lot of lonely people.
Yeah.
I see people whose wives have been sick for 15 years,
yes.
and they're just hungry for touch.
Yes.
You know, I give my clients total attention. I listen to them.
Yes.
I mean, we have some of the, you know,
better therapist than a lot.
Well, I mean, I think that the real therapy, if you will, or the, you know, the one of the most important parts of a session comes afterwards, after the sex is done,
yeah.
and you know, you're just hanging out talking with them. You're at pillow talk.
Yeah.
We share stories. They confess things. They tell me things from their childhood, or
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a lot of people that don't have that kind of ability to connect with someone else intimately,
yeah.
emotionally, intimately, physically, intimately. You
and
know,
they know
someone,
that information is not going to go anywhere. I mean,
I know.
It really
Absolutely.
Can't, actually. You know,
yeah,
without
think,
you blowing your cover, so...
Right, and I think that gives them the freedom to just, like, you know, kind of spill it, and
yes.
they can just leave it there, and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something... I've talked to several professional DOMs in this series already, Lady Lydia and Scott Daddy and Dart, and other people have said that basically the same kind of thing. It's very therapeutic to be able, you know, to it's therapeutic for their clients to come and completely release, just, you know, just not be who they are in their normal life, just come and have an expression of, you know, something completely different. And then,
right.
you know, walk away from the experience feeling cleansed, and then, you know, but knowing that they were safe, they were secure, that they were, and the practitioner they're working with can be trusted.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I've often said that it's one of the most honest relationships there are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you give me what I need, which is money. Mm-hmm. I give you what you need, which is sexual, you know, satisfaction, intimate, you know, caring conversation, touch, mm-hmm. You know, someone that that's not going to shame you around your fetishes or your curiosities, mm-hmm. you know. So there's no games. You don't have to take me out to dinner, and you don't have to tell me that you're going to call me the next day.
Yeah.
You know,
which
in fact,
so
don't
refreshing.
Call me.
Please.
No, you're welcome. I actually don't let clients call me. I have everything's by email. Right. But no, they're welcome to like email me the next day and set up the next appointment. Just kidding. But, yeah.
Is there a significant part of your work that is like role play?
Oh well, yeah, that's my favorite part. Actually,
oh,
I do quite a bit of role play.
Can you elaborate? Some for us?
Sure. Well, I do have a lot of fetish clients and role play clients. You know, I love being able to help somebody kind of explore that, you know, those curiosities in a non-shaming way. Mm-hmm. And I'm constantly fascinated by where people's minds go, mm-hmm. where their sexuality go, how it shows up in fetishes and role playing. You know, I mean, I'm pretty kinky myself. I was in a DS relationship with a foot fetishist. Who was a tickle torturer, and that was one of the best experiences or relationships I've ever had.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me so much more honest and forthright than a lot of relationships that I see from time to time.
Right, right. Because, you know, you may not be, you know, a certain, you may not be a top, but, you know, the expectation in the relationship is that you are, and so you have to sit there and kind of fake your way through it or something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in a fetish or role-playing session with a client, I usually have a general idea what the client's interested in beforehand,
uh-huh.
you know, so that way I can have, like, costumes and props assembled and kind of give some thought, you know, about what their particular kink is, like what their goal is, or are they seeking humiliation or power play or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I've, you
and
know,
what you're going to wear and...
Yeah,
sort of
like
thing.
The costumes,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I've had clients who've asked me to play, like, the role of their mother who catches them masturbating.
Ah, interesting, yes.
And scolds them, and then teaches them how to masturbate properly. And I had one who, wanted me to be a medical doctor and give him a thorough examination.
Mm-hmm.
Can you see my air quotes?
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
And, I can from here.
Yeah, really. So, and that scenario actually developed over several sessions where,
yeah,
like,
right.
I gradually, like, brought more and more sex workers. So, like, there was a group of doctors examining him. And it went from, like, a fairly mild examination with no ejaculation to mm-hmm. progressing to cock and ball torture
mm-hmm.
and ultimately to medical torture.
Wow, interesting.
You know, the expanding speculum in his ass, mm-hmm. saline injected into his balls. I actually
right.
didn't do that part.
Mm-hmm.
I left that to my friend who is the, you know, more experienced Dom because there's safety issues there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wasn't comfortable with that. But there's all sorts of themes and variations on, you know, I'm sure as you're well aware of, humiliation, submissive, dominant roles. And there's ones that are just in their own category, like the guy who wanted to jerk off while he watched me crush cans with my stilettos. You know, he brought a bunch of large, like those really big, like tomato cans. They're
uh-huh.
all emptied and nicely
uh-huh.
cleaned out and everything. And, you know, and that is actually a variation on the gas pedal pumping kink.
Yes.
You know, where you watch a girl in sexy heels pump the
yes.
gas pedal
absolutely.
Up and down.
Absolutely.
Up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And I'm just thinking, I'm getting paid for this. Right on. I love my job.
And all these fabulous shoes.
No. But yeah, no, those things are really fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but I mean, I'm not making fun of them.
No,
at all.
Of course not.
I totally get into it, and I think that's why, you know, people keep coming back to me is because.
And they wouldn't come back to you if they thought that you were abusive or belittling
or,
in some fashion or another, unless
exactly.
of course they're paying you to do that. But the thing is that you know, people know honesty and authenticity. I mean, I certainly see it in my lines of work as well. So absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you don't succeed, I mean, if you aren't, you know, client directed and focused on their needs and helping them through stuff, of course within your own boundaries. But if you don't do that, I mean, you're not going to be very successful.
Right. No, and I really do enjoy that. I really do. I really am fascinated by, you know, where people's heads are at. I'm really interested in that. And I think it's cool. I mean, the tickle torture relationship that I was in, I absolutely loved him because he was so incredibly committed to his kink.
Right.
I mean, you know, he was working through it, and he found other people online. This is in the mid-90s, you know, when chat and online stuff was just kind of starting to, you know, catch on and everything. And he, you know, found a whole community of other people just like him. And, and it's like, whoa, you know, I don't feel like such a weirdo anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, just to be that committed, I mean, he was committed to, I mean, he could describe a foot and exactly what he liked about a foot, just down to the T.
Right. And you know, for those of us who have been paying attention about human sexuality, either as a therapist or as a sex worker or a therapist / sex worker, the vast array of human sexual response is absolutely amazing to me.
I mean, it's
so fascinating. I mean, I mean, I've been so amazed in my life to have encountered so many different people with so many sexual interests that I would have never, ever have guessed was out there even, let alone have encountered, had it not been for the work that I do. So I'm enormously blessed.
Yeah, you sure are. And you know, even in my line of work, I never think I'm going to be shocked, and then something will come along, and I'm like, oh, holy shit, really? Okay.
Which really broadens our mind, I would suspect.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm speaking for myself, that, you know, I'm amazed that, you know, we can be so creative about, in terms of sexuality, humans can. And, you know, and then I see, you know, the vast majority of people that I encounter in my therapy practice, and even online, people writing into me, you know, their slice of sexual life is so paper thin compared to, you know, the vast, you know, array that is out there. And they try to, you know, make judgments about all the other people who, you know, don't share, you know, or are not exactly like them. And it just, it breaks my heart.
Right, I know what you mean. I mean, there's a whole maybe even a majority of people out there that still think whipped cream is kinky. You know, and I'm
it all
like,
depends where you put it,
baby.
I suppose.
I must be on another planet.
it's so very true. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to do this particular series of podcasts with people like you, this sex education, because... for the vast number of people in our audience, all of this is just going to be raising their eyebrows, you know, way over their hairline.
Awesome.
And listen, I'm afraid that our time is up, and I have so many more questions. Could I ask you to come back next week?
Oh, I'd be happy to.
Oh, thank you.
But before we
go, could I ask you to give us your website address and possibly walk us around a little bit so we can visit you online in the interim?
Oh, sure, definitely. Well, my website is modernhooker.com, all one word, modernhooker.com. And on that, you'll have my cartoons. And there'll be a link to my blog. My blog is modernhooker.wordpress.com. And then I have a whole weekly strip at carnalnation.com. And those are all different cartoons than the ones that are on my Modern Hooker site. So, yeah.
When do you find time to touch yourself impurely? That's what I'd like to know.
Oh, I'm doing it right now. That's my kink. Yeah, my kink is Dr. Dick talking to Dr. Dink and touching myself.
This is disgusting. Until next week, ma'am. Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you in cyberspace.
Thank you very much.
Bye now. Fantastic show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my discussion with Modern Hooker and more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is So Hard. I know what you're thinking. With so many herbal supplements on the market that boast fast-acting results, it's hard to know which erection-enhancing formula to choose, or if one shouldn't just avoid them altogether. I always tell my clients to beware of bogus claims and the dangerously adulterated products that abound in the marketplace. But So Hard is different. It's made of 100% herbal extracts. It's as effective as any medically prescribed drugs I've tested, but it's much kinder to my system. There are no headaches, unsightly flushes, upset stomach, rise in blood pressure, or altered vision. So Hard also provides the additional health benefits that normally come with the all-natural ingredients used in this product. These include an increase in energy and vitality, as well as antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and antibacterial properties. Listen, every human body is unique. Each one of us metabolizes what we consume in a slightly different way, so keep that in mind when you use So Hard. And just so that we're clear, So Hard is not miraculous. It is not going to override an unhealthy lifestyle, but it can positively affect our sexual response cycle, making us more easily aroused, as well as more energetic lovers.
I couldn't do it for love, let alone money.
So what did you do?
I did him with my hand, this one.
A hand job?
That's right.
A wank. I'll pop a soccer loo.
Pop a soccer loo?
Girls, could you keep it down over there? I'm trying to work over here. Look for the So Hard banner on DrDickSexAdvice.com. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe, and when you do, feel free to leave a comment. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.